You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hypertheical.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
What's up, everyone? It's Noah Daniels, and we're for another episode of the Real Hauntings podcast. On this episode, Savannah is here to co-host with us. You know her as At That Witch Up the Holler on TikTok. Savannah, how are you doing? It's so good to see you.
Hey, y'all. I am doing good. It's good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed you so much coming on the Real or Creepy. I don't know why I can never remember that. It's my own fucking show. Real or Creepy, and going over some of those stories for Reddit. And I know the audience has also enjoyed hearing from you so much. So I can't wait for you to co-host with us.
I'm super excited. It's been a lot of fun so far.
And our guest tonight is Daisy. You can find her on TikTok as Daisy May. That's DazeeMaeE. She has really a plethora of things that you can check out, from makeup tutorials to talking about sobriety to also talking about a really creepy paranormal experience she had that we're going to dive into. And also something I discovered, her mother was in prison with a very infamous inmate, whatever you want to call her. So so we'll hear a little bit what it's like to be in prison with Gypsy Rose from her mother's point of view, not Daisy's point of view. Daisy, welcome to the podcast. Sorry, that was a mouthful.
That's okay. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I have lived a very interesting life. I'm a bit of a skeptic myself, but I'm also a true crime horror paranormal fan. So I'm excited to share. I've had a few experiences in my life, but I'm excited to share the one that I unfortunately cannot deny because two other family members were present.
Those are always the fun ones where you want to convince yourself they weren't real because they're creepy AF. And then other people are like, nah, man, it's totally real. I was there too. And you're like, great. Cool. I don't know how to view the world anymore. Well, one thing we'd love to find out from our guests is where they fall in what we call the believometer, meaning 0, you don't believe in ghosts, and 10, ghosts are absolutely real. Where do you kind of fall on that scale?
Hey, I'm like a 6 or a 7. I'm definitely lean more towards they're real, but I think that skepticism is me feeling safer that they're not.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Savannah, are you into true crime at all?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's more of an unhealthy coping mechanism, to be honest. It's like a trauma response, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think My Favorite Murder was one of the first podcasts that really got me into podcasting and helped me kind of discover that I also had a love for true crime. Before we jump into your paranormal experience, I would love for you to share with our audience about who your mom was in jail with. And if you could also maybe just, for the uninitiated in a Gypsy Rose's story, if you could share a little bit about that too.
So yeah, so my mom was in prison for drug-related charges, because people always ask, because they're like, how did she wind up in there with a lot of notorious, actually, murderers. And the thing is, Missouri has two prison systems for women. They have one in Vandalia, Missouri, and one in Chillicothe, Missouri. And the way that the system works, I don't know if this is typical to other states, but usually everyone ends up in Vandalia and some move over to Chillicothe. So my mother was present in Vandalia. She was also in there with Alyssa Bustamante. She was in there with Diane Staudet and Gypsy Rose. Now, Gypsy Rose did get moved to Chillicothe, so everything that you see, or if you look it up, it's gonna say she was in Chillicothe, but for a very short period of time, she was in Vandalia. And Mom's description of her opinion, I guess, of Gypsy Rose was very lackluster when I asked, because being a person who's so intrigued by true crime, I was looking for a little bit more. And my mom is a very blunt, straightforward type of individual who just doesn't fluff around. And she just said she was lame. And if I could, honestly, I don't know. I guess what I want to say is, if I could kind of dissect that, knowing my mother and growing up with her, I think that what she meant by that is just that everything seemed really blown out of proportion. I don't want to downplay Gypsy's experience at all, because I am not her. I did not live her life. And regardless, what she went through is horrific. But I also, on the other hand, you can find the TikTok video, I'm sure, because it's super viral, have my own opinions and kind of discrepancies with murderers being released. You know, it's just one of those things. But yeah, it's kind of a weird concept. I made a video 2 years ago just kind of asking my mom who she was in there with, the more infamous people. And I didn't realize Gypsy was going to gain the notoriety, like the popularity that she did. So when that video started going re-viral when she got out because of Gypsy's social media presence, I was like, let's do an update. And it wasn't very well received. I'd say it was 50-50, but she wasn't in there long. She doesn't state that she had any conversations with her or anything. She had more experiences with Diane and Alyssa than she genuinely did Gypsy. So this is really my mom just laying eyes on her versus like having an intimate relationship with her in any way.
Did she state if there was like an internal buzz about her when she came into the prison, or were people just kind of another day in the system?
Yeah, so that's what's interesting is I think you don't really comprehend unless you're someone in prison, and all prisons are different. I know that the men's prisons, even just from women's, are a lot different. And you don't, sometimes you know, sometimes you don't. So my mom didn't know about Diane until she got out. But when it came to Alyssa and Gypsy, like, it wasn't that there was a buzz, but everyone just kind of knew. But at the same time, everyone's on kind of like a spiteful level of like, well, I'm a criminal too. Like, you're not going to get more notoriety than me. Like, we're all even here because we're all in prison. So I think that everyone tries to not get too excited for someone, because I mean, prison's obviously not very glamorous, but you definitely also have to be careful about who you are putting on a pedestal before they even get into prison, because, you know, they want it to be as equal level playing field as possible for the women who have been there for a really long time, who have worked their way up to be able to maybe potentially receive favors from other inmates and things of that nature. Like, there is a internal hierarchy. And so I think that it's not the buzz we've seen outside on the media as far as prison goes. And I don't know about her stay in Chillicothe, but in Vandalia, it was just like, another day, another inmate, but they knew a lot more about her than another typical inmate.
And you mentioned another name. I know I saw on your social media that your mom was there with a serial killer. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that's Diane Staudet. So she's actually cellmates with her. And my mom just seen her as like a sweet older woman. She didn't know how to play the dice game Farkle. My mom taught her how to play it. And when my mom got out of prison, she told me she was eating a peanut butter sandwich. And there was something on the TV. It was either Snapped or Dateline. And her cellmate popped up. And she was like, what? And a lot of people found that hard to believe when I reiterated that story, because you're like, well, if you're in prison for murder, everyone knows you're in prison for murder. And that's just not the case. If you've been there for a really long time, it's not something that people are talking about every day. Again, there's a hierarchy to it, and it's normal everyday life for them. It's not gossiping. There isn't media or social media, you know, or news. And Diane Staudet actually poisoned her family with antifreeze. The first, I believe, being her husband, who was I might be wrong, but he was like a bluegrass player in Branson, Missouri. So he was, I mean, he was a local, you know, celebrity, if you will. And no one thought anything of it. She, as far as I know, had three or four children. She ended up poisoning one of her children and successfully poisoned them. I don't know if they were male or female. And then when she tried to poison the third child out of four, that is when she got caught. I know that that child's identity was changed and that they're alive and hopefully well. And then as far as the fourth child, her name was Rachel. And she kept a diary and a journal and entry logs of everything that her mom was doing, stating that she knew what was going on. And I don't know for sure if Rachel was in on it or if she just was aware of it. Either way, not a good thing to be doing. And she took a plea deal in order to testify against her mother to get a lesser sentence. But she was also in there in prison. I'm not sure if it was Vandalia or Chillicothe, but my mom's name is Rachel. So my mom thinks the reason Diane took so fondly to her is because her name was the same as the daughter that she never tried to end's life. And being poisoned by antifreeze is a really horrific way to go, especially if you don't know what's happening. I think that it's like similar to food poisoning. You're probably questioning what's going on internally. You're going to the hospital and then your organs just kind of shut down. There was also like computer searches for her looking up a very specific antifreeze that didn't have a smell to it that for sure would in someone's life, which is just horrific. And as far as I know, the reason she never killed Rachel is because she was extremely, or tried to, was because she was extremely talented, which is unfortunate because it sounds like her husband really was too. But supposedly that was her favorite child.
You know, true crime is so fascinating, but once you get into the ins and outs, it usually ends up being pretty depressing. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
Savannah, I'm curious, you know, you're somebody who can see and interact with spirits, and you've kind of had a lifetime of dealing with the supernatural. I know when you were on, we kind of talked about the idea of demons and, you know, we don't like really like to classify entities as certain things. Do you believe that people who have committed atrocities, like Daisy was speaking of the inmates in prison that, you know, have been serial killers or just, you know, anything really horrific. Do you think that has an effect on them in the supernatural world, the afterlife, whatever you want to call it?
Ooh,
I know I hit you with always the big overarching questions.
I believe that certain people do have to answer for things in a way, not in like a, I don't believe in a hell. I'm not saying that. I believe that there's a life review at some point, and there are certain tests and things that we are supposed, lessons we're supposed to learn in this life. And when we fail those lessons, or we don't learn them, or we are just shitty ass people. I'm not sure exactly what happens, but I do believe there's some kind of retribution. There's some kind of, whether that's reincarnation and you need to do this again. I believe something happens in the afterlife. Then again, there's so many in the paranormal field, you run into the spirits of these evil people quite often. So I think some of them are scared to go on and choose to stay stuck because they don't want to face whatever is next.
That's interesting. Yeah, I know I've been doing this podcast too long in interviews when the other day I was working on this vehicle I've been kind of restoring and I had a socket wrench and I was putting on new connectors to the battery and I was just swinging the socket wrench around, just not thinking. It was early in the morning. I just set my kids' breakfast down and I swung the socket wrench that was on the negative and it just swung around and hit the positive as I'm holding it and sparks literally went like over my head. And it, for some reason, I just started laughing because nothing, you know, bad happened to me, but I was just like, gosh, I feel like in another parallel universe, like part of me just dropped on the ground and I get to just keep on going. I don't know, but yeah, it's all interesting to think about. Well, Daisy, let's jump into your paranormal story. So obviously you have your kind of big story that went viral online. And I know that one comes with confirmation and we'll kind of go through that. Prior to that, and that story did happen when you were fairly young, did you have any other experiences before that that stick out to you?
Yeah. As a child, I had notorious repetitive, horrific nightmares over and over and over. There was like three or four that would switch on and off. And then I would also, you know, have the random nightmare, but I had repetitive nightmares over and over, to the point as a child, it leaked into my real life. Like, I even remember my uncle at some point, there was a point in the back, there's a spot in the backyard of my grandma's house that I was convinced that these creatures that showed up in my dream lived, and they hid there until nighttime. I was incredibly terrified of the dark or my feet touching the ground. And I remember my uncle taking me to the spot in the yard, and the whole time he's like taking me to the yard, he's holding my hand. He's like, it's going to be fine. Like, we've got to put an end to this. This is ridiculous. Like, you're a kid. You shouldn't be so spending so much of your time just focused on how scared you are in real life, having these nightmares. And I remember him taking me to this, it was a little corner in the backyard of my grandma's yard. She had an acre yard, so it was very large. And he was like, see, there's nothing here. And I had to have been like 7, maybe 8 years old. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, because it's the daytime and you can't see them. And we walked back up the hill, but I also remember like him practically dragging me down there. Like, I did not want to go to that corner of the yard. And that house, supposedly the people that lived there prior, my grandma rented it. It had been rented from a family friend, I'm sorry. So it was like two people prior. So the people who originally lived in the house or something, one of them was a nurse. And so they had these very distinct clogs at that time of year, that decade. I don't know. My grandma knows more about this, but supposedly there was like a domestic conflict and over children, and the wife took the kids and the husband ended up taking his life in the house, supposedly with a shotgun. I don't know how true that is or authentic that is. I do know like other people in my family would experience, if they were in the basement, they would hear like clogs walking across, or like the front door opening and closing. I never really had those experiences personally in that house, but my great grandmother's house on my mom's side, this is on my brother and sister's dad's side, she had an incredibly old house that had a pantry that had a trap door that was just like basically someone just poured concrete in the shape of a hole. You could see the crawl space, like the gap space between the bottom of the house and where the basement entered. And anytime we stayed there growing up, you would hear chains all night long. The toilets would flush. There was a point where we heard a chain rattling for so long, we were so annoyed that the next morning, me and my mom asked my granny, like, are you having trouble with the chain lock? Like, do you not understand like how to chain lock the door? And she was like, we don't have a chain lock. And me and my mom just looked at each other like, what? You sure? Almost any family member that's lived in that house or stayed in that house has claimed to have some kind of weird experience. There's a point where my sister thought I was standing behind her while she was watching TV, and she turned around and was like, stop trying to scare me. And then I got out of the bath and was actually walked into the room, and she was in the middle of the bed with the covers tucked up to her chin, just like eyes glued to the TV. And I was like, what's going on with you? And she's like, tell me you just came in the room 10 minutes ago. And I was like, I can't tell you that. I didn't. And so I seen her pure terror on her face. There was another time where my aunt had claimed to see a demon in the blue room, which was a bedroom that just had blue everything in it. So we referred to it as the blue room. Don't know how credible that is. I never spoke to this aunt. And then that was the room my mom slept in a lot. And there was a point in time where she was laying on the bed and I was standing in the doorway, and I seen something above her head, which it looked like a hand. Don't know if it was. And I guess the look on my face terrified my mother so much that she just stopped talking mid-sentence and literally jumped from the edge of her bed into my bedroom across the hall from the doorway I was standing in. And I was like, what are you doing? And she was like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And I was like, I don't know what's going on either. I was like, don't you want to know like what I even saw? And she was like, nope, sure. Don't even tell me. Don't tell me. And so all of those experiences like were obviously weird leading up to this experience, but I don't really chalk any of those up to being something, because I don't know that they're something. But the nightmares eventually stopped when my grandma sold the house that man apparently, or supposedly, allegedly killed himself in. And I didn't put two and two together of that until years later. So
Savannah, when you were young and people were taking you to houses to kind of use your gifts to exercise the houses, mm-hmm. would this kind of be a typical narrative you would hear before going to a house? Would it be instances like this that you would hear?
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty classic. That's a pretty classic build up, those little things over time, multiple people experiencing just weird, scary things, and just the general, especially with how fear oriented all of those experiences sound.
Sorry, I should probably mention this. I can't believe I didn't. My great-grandma who owned that house is a devout Christian, to the point we don't speak about those things, which is why I think I don't have a lot of stories besides my own experiences, even though I've heard my aunt's claim of these things and such, that she had a priest come in and bless the house three different times. So not just once, but then twice, and then a third time. The house actually fell in on itself after a pipe busted and it like got condemned. And this was pretty recently. But prior to that, to that day, you could still see the salt water crosses on all the door frames. Just gives me chills thinking about it, because it just gave it such an eerie effect as a kid being there, because it was like this one thing in my life that my grandmother refuses to admit has taken precautions three times in order to protect herself.
I do have a question though, Savannah. So you hear Daisy talk about how the loop kind of ended once the house was sold.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's something you hear from time to time. What is it about like a haunted house where trauma has taken place that sometimes the negative supernatural experiences that are kind of tracking a family ends once they sever ties with that home?
Yeah, so that's why I do believe that places can be haunted. A lot of people don't believe that places can be haunted. They think, well, only people are haunted. And I think that is a gross overgeneralization. And places, especially homes, are like just containers for energy. They're containers for trauma. The walls witness everything, like everything that happens within a home, especially if there's like certain geological features, whether it's like on limestone or sandstone, if there's water nearby. Sometimes there's just a perfect storm to where that specific location just traps all of that energy. And especially if it's like one family over multiple generations, there's just like this closeness. Many witches, we believe that the home has a spirit. The home has its own spirit. And so that spirit is bearing witness to all of our trauma as a family through generations and holds on to that. And so when we separate ourselves from that location entirely, then sometimes it just stays. If you're lucky, it just stays. Like, you're hoping it does not follow you away from that. But yeah, that's not an abnormal thing, that sometimes it is just contained in one place.
And Daisy, this episode of the Real Hauntings, Real Ghost Stories podcast is brought to you by Wild Grain. Hey, y'all, it's Noah Daniels, and oh boy, I just got my box of Wild Grain bread and pasta. My whole family has been so excited to dive in. We started with a sourdough, and it was amazing. If you're looking to make Mother's Day brunch planning easier or just looking for a great gift for your mom, you've got to check out Wild Grain. Order before May 6th to get your box in time for Mother's Day. Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every item bakes frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. The next thing up for us to try is the biscuits with our breakfast. And you can now fully customize your Wild Grain box, so you can choose any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box, when you go to wildgrain.com/hauntings to start your subscription. You heard me, free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/hauntings. That's wildgrain.com/hauntings, or you can use promo code hauntings at checkout.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
You spoke of those nightmares, and I know that plays into your next story that we'll talk about. Are you still having vivid nightmares, or are you a vivid dreamer in general?
Luckily, no. Thank goodness. Every once in a great while, I will get one of those nightmares that are very similar to the repetitive ones I had growing up, but they're not identical. But the fear I feel inside is identical, and those really, really shake me. But I mean, I'm not having them nearly like I was before. And I don't know, I was an alcoholic for a couple of years. I'm almost 3 years sober now, and I really struggled with sleep. Thank you. I really struggled with sleep when I first got sober. And so I wasn't dreaming much at all. Like, I had a dream the other night, someone told me I couldn't order vanilla root beer because it was too sugary and it was gonna hurt my stomach, and I was pissed. But that's about as serious as it gets now. So,
and the reason I ask is because I'm a very vivid dreamer. I had my parents described as night terrors when I was young, but I mean, I still have some version of that from time to time, not all the time now, but I mean, I'll wake my wife up in the middle of the night where in my dream I'm screaming to get out of it, but in real life it just comes out as like muffled sounds. I'll spare everybody the imitation of it. I have found through these interviews that there's some kind of connection between extremely vivid dreamers and paranormal experiences. I don't know if it's a thinning of the veil that kind of puts us in that space. I know a lot of those people also suffer from sleep paralysis at various points. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting thought of what is going on there. Why are our brains more apt to have nightmares? And Daisy, I'm curious if you're like me, where some of those dreams I can recall almost like they're real memories from when I was young, like the dreams themselves, like I know they're dreams, but they feel real. Do you have that same experience?
Yeah. And some of the dreams are so dark that I logically know that they're not realistic. But I can still see every detail. I can feel the feeling that I felt in those dreams. And the fear, the just immense overwhelming fear. There's nothing like fear in a dream. It's the most intense fear I've ever felt in my life is the fear that I felt in those dreams. And I've had sleep paralysis a few times. Luckily, it's not like a common occurrence. I've never seen the man with the black hat or anything in the corner, but sleep paralysis is debilitating. And I'm also intrigued by the thinning of the veil that you mentioned. And I wonder if it's because neither of those houses are in my life anymore. And my life is so different from what it was in childhood, you know, if that helps me to sleep with a lot more peace at night. And maybe I'm just lucky to have a home where it's peaceful and hasn't seen a lot of trauma. But to me, they are memories because I can remember the dream itself and I can remember how I felt when I woke up. And I can remember just how like agonizing as a kid going to sleep was for me.
Yeah, I've spoken about this before, so I'll be brief, but I had one specifically in my 20s, I think I was, but where I had like a whole life, like fell in love, had a family. I distinctly remember sitting on a couch with like, you know, whatever wife I had in this dream and like seeing the kids and just being like, wow, this is great. And she's like, yeah, too bad it's not real. And then I just like I woke up, I was like, what do you mean? And then I like woke myself up and I don't know. It's wild how real some of that can be. While it's conceptually not real, you know, it's just things that our brain is drawing up. But I guess what are we if not our brains? So who's to say what's real and what's not. Well, on that tangent, I would love to hear about the story that we're here to talk about. So if you could kind of walk us through this frightening tale from your youth, we'd love to hear about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. So as I mentioned, my mom was in prison for drugs. So prior to that, she was an active addict in addiction. So there were a lot of times during the summers I'd stay with different family members. That's why I lived in both my grandma's houses. And at this point, I was staying with my aunt over the summer, who isn't by blood related to me. It's actually my brother and sister's grandmother's sister. So technically would be my great aunt. She had a daughter who was 2 or 3 years older than me, younger, I'm sorry. And their family has always been the one that's like super into the paranormal. Like that's that cousin, even though she's younger than me, that's who introduced me to Zach Bagans. That's who she had like a whole collection of the Living Dead dolls. She lived for it. She loved it. And my aunt always told us stories about a house that they had prior to where they live now and have lived for a very long time. And my cousin at the time was so young when she lived there, but she has a vivid memory of like a doll, like a toy doll that she owned walking up and talking to her, that she gets very, very freaked out when she talks about it. There was a time where I was in that house with her and their parents had a waterbed we would play on. We weren't allowed to, and it was in the basement. And they had like a fake police siren on the headboard of the waterbed. And it went off one time and we were freaking out. And I was like, unplug that, unplug that. And we look over and it's like not plugged into the wall at all. And we're like, we ran up those stairs so fast. And, you know, this, so I've had a lot of experiences with this cousin, and this is the side of the family that's really believes in it because they've had so many experiences. And I think the more you open yourself up to that too, the more you see, just because you're not negating everything that you see, right? Which is why healthy skepticism is probably necessary, which is why this is the one story I equate to not being able to negate. Basically, I'm staying that summer at my cousin's house, and we live in a, she lives in a trailer. So all of those are typically set up the same. You come in through the front door and there's the living room. To the left is the kitchen, to the right is a hallway with bedrooms off of it. And she had a couch on either side of the long sides of her trailer. And so we're both sitting there for hours just on our phones, doing whatever we want all day long. It's summer, we're kids. Social media, like Instagram just came out. So we're just having the time of our life. And I remember I was sitting there and she, my cousin across the trailer had headphones in. And we always did this. Her, my aunt worked up the road. We'd stay there all day. She'd come home from work. We'd do something fun. So I decided I have to go to the bathroom. And for some reason, no one would ever go to the bathroom down the hallway. That was just like another known thing. It's just kind of creepy in that bathroom. It was really close to her older brother's bedroom. And so it was also like the boys' bathroom, but it just gave you kind of an eerie feeling. So we all just avoided that bathroom if we could. And we would go through the master bedroom to get to the master bathroom in her mom's room. And she had a cat. And I was getting ready to get up to go to the bathroom. And I was walking towards the master bedroom. I mean, I hadn't even made it to the kitchen yet. And her cat starts like hissing and spitting and like screeching, which if you're not familiar, like I feel like if you have a cat or you've ever seen a cat do this, you know, it's like very intense. When a cat is like hissing and screaming and spitting, like you can't deny that they're like, they're angry at something, but she's the only other animal in the house. And so I look over my cousin and I'm like, Bella, Bella. And she takes off her headphones and she's like, what? And I was like, do you hear that? And she like turns around to see her cat is hissing. And so the master bedroom has French doors, which are two doors conjoining for anyone listening that doesn't know. And so the left one is closed, but the right one is open. And her cat is sitting kind of in the entrance of the right one, hissing at something that in the direction of behind that door. So neither me nor my cousin can see behind that door. And the cat starts to settle down a little bit. And me and my cousin are kind of looking back and forth at each other. Only a couple of seconds have passed at this point. And we hear the distinct clink that everyone knows when that plastic toilet seat hits the porcelain bowl, like as if someone had climbed in through the bathroom window and stepped onto the toilet to let themselves in the room. And we look at each other and my cousin grabs the phone and we just book it for the front door. Because at this point we're like, there's an intruder in the house. And so we're on the front porch. She has an attached front porch instead of like the three traditional steps that are attached to most trailers. And we're sitting on the porch and she's like, what do we do? And I was like, call your mom. Like, I don't know, call your mom. So she's like, okay, are you sure? Before we can even decide that we're going to call her mom, we can visibly see the trailer shake. We can feel it because this deck porch is attached to this trailer and we can hear it. And if you've ever lived in a trailer or familiar with anyone that lives in a trailer, it's very thin, it's very movable, and it doesn't take a lot for that to happen. But we hear boom, 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 as it goes all the way from where we originally heard the noise to the other end of the trailer. And it's silent for a second, and then all of a sudden...
What the dramatic effect. Wow. Scared me.
And it sounded identical to like what I would imagine a really good woodworked old dresser, like a really nice one, would sound like if you just slammed a drawer as hard as you could. And so at that point, my cousin's already dialing. Like, she's dialing her mom's phone number as fast as she can. She's like, you got to get up here. I think there's someone in the house. Like, we don't know what to do. So at this point, we move into the road. And like, we're like, we don't want to be like right by the trailer. This person might not know we're here. She might have seen her mom leave for work. And we're trying to be as safe as we can. But at the same time, we're like, where do we run? Like, the house is the safest in our eyes, but there's an intruder in there. So we walk out to the road, and she lived almost at the end of the street. So we're kind of like in the, like, the little loop around cul-de-sac area. And we're just waiting. And her mom worked about 15 minutes away. I swear she was there in 3.5 minutes. And she was there so fast. I couldn't believe it. So she pulls up, we walk up to her car. She's like, what's going on? She's like, you guys stay here. So we're like, okay. You know, and I'm still like almost 14 at this point, I think. And so we end up walking up to the porch while her mom goes into the house, and she checks every single window and every single door. And she's like, and she comes back out, and she's like, unless someone came in through the front door where you guys were sleeping in the living room overnight and we're awake, there's no one in this house. What are you talking about? Why did you call me home from work? Like, she is very angry with us. But this wasn't something we just like thought about or quickly were like, maybe we should call mom at work and ask her if we can have a granola bar. Like, it was like, this was serious. This seemed intense, and to both of us, it was real. We felt it, we heard it, we seen it. We didn't visibly see a human, but we seen and heard someone run through the trailer. And there was no way it could have been anything else, because the trailer was moving. Like, we could feel our bodies slightly shaking. And so she's asking my cousin questions and kind of asking us questions. And we're like, no, like, no one came in the house. Like, this is, we tell her exactly what I just told you. And she starts to get really, really angry, my aunt. And at this point, I think it's because we've called her out of work. And she's staring at my cousin, and she's like, what did you do? And my cousin's like, we didn't do anything. Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, Bella, what did you guys do? And at this point, I'm like, are we about to get in trouble right now? Cause we really didn't do anything. And I guess my cousin's into darker stuff than even I knew. And so she's like questioning Bella without actually asking her what she had done. And so she just keeps saying this general statement. And finally my cousin's like, we told scary stories last night. We were telling each other like different nightmares we used to have. Me and Daisy found out that we had the same nightmare. So we drew the creature that we seen in the nightmare down on paper. And my aunt flipping loses it, like starts screaming, in Jesus's name, you're not allowed in this house. In Jesus's name, you're not in this house. She's like running through this house, manic, asking for the drawing, finally gets the drawing, starts ripping them up. At this point, I'm like disheveled and like, what's happening? Because this side of my family is not religious. The other side of my family is very religious. This side wouldn't even let us say a prayer at my dad's funeral. Like, my grandma cut him off in the middle of the procession. Like, I just couldn't believe she'd ever even said the word Jesus. And she's running through the house and she's freaking out. And at this point, I'm kind of catching on that, like, she thinks something ominous has happened, because the night before, when my cousin and I were telling each other scary stories, as you do when you're 13 years old and you like horror movies, I was talking about a dream that I had about my grandma's house, and there were stairs leading down to the basement. And this is the house where the man allegedly killed himself in. And my grandma let us paint the wall going down to the basement steps, like finger paint it when we were younger. But in my dream, these images were incredibly ominous. They were not kid finger painting drawings. They were like daggers and flames and bats, like just darker images, things you'd relate to darker things. And as you got further and further down, it started being like more intense and more like gruesome and gory. And we had a cat that lived in that basement because we had other cats that would try to attack her. So she kind of lived most of her life in that basement. And her name was Soraya. And we were used to, anytime you went to the basement, you'd see Soraya. So it would kind of give you a little bit of a jump scare, because she'd jump out of nowhere. And you'd like forget that she lived down there sometimes, because my grandma was the one that fed her. So in the dream, you get to the bottom of the steps, and it's kind of like pulling you down. The little shitty light bulb is like flickering and you feel like you don't want to keep going, but you are. All the lights are turned off. And this was not a finished basement. This was not a nice basement. This was not a we had flooring basement. And my grandma was a hoarder. So you can imagine the state of the basement. Sierra is sitting at the bottom of the steps, almost on like a pedestal. And she's looking to the right. Again, a cat, right? So a lot of synchronicities here. And she's just sitting there. She's not making a single noise or word. And she starts spitting and screaming as she's looking to the right of the staircase. And the staircase has concrete walls, so you can't see anything until you get to the bottom of the staircase. Then you can see what's in front of you. And to the left, there was a little laundry room. And to the right, there was like some space. But to the right and back all the way around, there was a door. And this door existed in real life. And we were never allowed to go in there. My grandma got super, super freaked out. She just got weird about it. Like, we were never allowed in there as kids, which is fine. Because like, I didn't want to be in that basement to begin with. And so in this dream, I'm like rounding the corner and it's like, I can't stop myself. It's almost like I'm not even taking steps. I'm kind of just floating around the corner. And the door's a lot bigger in the dream than it is in real life. And we always kept like holiday decorations in there. So my grandma would just get out whatever holiday decorations it were, but we were never involved in that part. So I turn around and I'm like facing this big door. And to me in real life, what's behind this door truly is a mystery. I actually, to this day, have only seen the interior of that door once in my whole life. And it was just piled full of different seasonal decorations. And the cat is still hissing and screaming behind me. And I'm now facing the door and it's dark. Like there's barely an outline. Everything is very, very, very dark. But I can still kind of make out what's happening. Again, it's this big, large, much larger door than it was in real life. And I see fingers just slowly come across the door. And again, this is a nightmare. So these like long, pointy, like sharp, just like blades, and they're black. And all of a sudden the door just flies open. And I'm telling this dream to my cousin just as I'm relaying it to you now. And there's this big, I mean big, like a Yeti big. That's what I would like, the closest thing I could describe it to is like an abominable snowman or like a Yeti, but it's black and it's shadowy. And so it's big and it's ominous and it's like got like a hunchback and it's just nothing about it is smooth. And it's like this black shadowy thing with these just large, long claws. And it has this huge, bright white smile. And these tiny little beady red eyes, like the tiniest little beady red eyes ever. And it's just sitting there looking at me. And then the dream ends. And before I can even get to that point in the story, my cousin is crying. And I'm like, great, I'm gonna get in trouble. I've made my cousin cry at this point. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just a dream. Like, it's not real. I'm like, I didn't mean to make you cry. I'm sorry. Like, let's watch SpongeBob or something to like get your mind off of it, you know, because she's younger than me and I'm afraid I've just terrified her. And she's like, I've had the same dream. Prior to me describing the creature to her, I hadn't got that far yet. Again, we decided we would draw the creature that we seen and see if it was similar. And so we did. And it was like incredibly eerily ridiculous, similar, a big black figure, big white smile, very, very pointy long fingers and tiny, tiny red eyes. And that's when we had the experience was the next morning with my aunt, which my aunt believes that in some way we had let it enter our realm of reality in some degree, our life, we had given it at least a little bit of power. I found out later that the landlord my grandmother rented that house from attempted to summon angels in that room, and that's why we weren't allowed in that room.
That's not good.
Yeah, in the basement area?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know what's more terrifying, that experience or a waterbed with police sirens. Those both seem...
It's funny because I totally forgot about that until I was talking about it because I was like, well, my cousin had a lot of paranormal experiences that I wasn't a part of. But I forgot that there was a time I was in that house because there was a playhouse in the basement and we would get on the waterbed and that police siren went off and it wasn't plugged in and it freaked us out more than anything.
I can just imagine somebody from the 70s being like, all right, kids, you hear the siren. Don't come.
You're right. That's they're divorced now. So
oh man, that's I was getting chills as you were telling that. Yeah. That's super creepy. Savannah, what are your thoughts on what Daisy was describing? Do you think entities can be in dreams and then foster their way into reality, or does that work in reverse? Or like, what are your thoughts there?
I do believe that you can experience entities in dreams, especially if y'all are using the word vivid. Were you lucid dreaming? Do you lucid dream often?
I have lucid dreamt before. This was not a lucid dream in my in my experience. I couldn't control or stop what was happening.
Okay. Yeah, usually when there is a darker entity involved, you can't actually, you're not lucid for that. But if you have the ability kind of naturally to lucid dream, then there's a good chance that you're, or even if you are just regularly having vivid dreams, there's a good chance that you are kind of interacting with the astral plane a little bit unintentionally, usually. And entities can manifest in your dreams, and you can interact with things that you don't necessarily want to or have any control over. And one of the ways that we do summon things, intentionally or unintentionally, is with symbols, with drawings, with names, and writing things down. Writing things down is like never a good idea, especially if there's two of you. So you and the cousin were close then, like?
Yeah, at the time. Okay. I haven't spoken to her in a while. No bad blood or anything, but we were pretty close at that time.
Yeah, so that's, well, I mean, it's not normal. It's not abnormal for people who are really close, like sibling bonds, close cousin, that sort of thing, to share dreams. My sisters and I used to share dreams similar to that and have experiences with these darker entities, very, very similar to what you're describing. So that's not super uncommon for two people that are very, very close, have very similar experiences in the astral. But yeah, I would say that you both drawing it and while so intently focused on it, and there is just something that hits differently about that age of girls. Like, we just, the energy that we, oh my God, like,
yeah,
there is nothing scarier than some preteen girls. They pull some stuff out of thin air. It's crazy. Yeah, I'd say you might have accidentally low-key gave it a little bit of a foothold to kind of just show up and whatever that was, just show out a little bit.
Yeah, at the time, I just thought my aunt was insane. But looking back, and just believing in, like, law of attraction and manifestation, mm-hmm. to a degree, like, and just, you know, the world being what you make of it, I would never do that now. Not because I'm a believer that it's true, but because I wouldn't be risking that.
Yep.
You know?
Well, there goes the next segment of the podcast called Draw Daisy's Demon. But I guess we'll scrap that for another time.
Please don't, unless you want to draw a demon.
Savannah, what about what Daisy was saying about the previous person trying to conjure angels? I've never really heard that.
Yeah, that's just literally never a good idea. Let's not conjure anything, probably, if you don't know what you're doing. That sounds like the old Christian lady version of playing with a Ouija board. Mm. You're looking for something. You want to connect with something. And especially, oh my gosh, especially if you are desperate for some kind of contact, and you don't know what you're doing, you're gonna get contact, but it is not gonna be with what you're wanting 99% of the time. Conjuring things is real. You can absolutely conjure things, but if you don't know what you're doing, it goes sideways almost every time, and then you have to call somebody. You gotta call in the church, and it's a whole mess, and it's...
She's instead just rented it to my grandma. This lady was a lunatic too. She was not the sharpest crayon in the box. So yeah, if you're going to summon angels, whatever wants to come through or be summoned is what is easiest going to come through, you know?
Yeah.
You had all this take place. You were a teenager. Did you ever feel like that entity reappeared in your life in any way? Or was that kind of the end of that experience?
Interesting question. This might be hard to grasp for some people, or maybe even controversial, but my younger sister actually believes that my mother had a demon attached to her, and it contributed to a lot of her addiction. I don't know if I follow fully, but I see where she's coming from with that. And oftentimes I wonder if it allowed more dark things to come into our life, or somehow helped me with my addiction, if you will, and just seeing a much darker side of the world for a longer time. I am lucky enough to say that I really feel so much safer and secure as an adult when it comes to the paranormal and haven't had those experiences in a long time. But I don't know if it had to do with my parents. I feel like whenever you're an addict, you're often not playing with the nicest of souls, those that are present here and those that may not be, that you don't even realize maybe that you're playing with. And I think that that can contribute to a lot of darkness in your life and in another realm seeping into this life. So it's interesting because my mom is sober now. So many things seem to be better and none of us seem to be struggling with the thing we were struggling with before. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of forgot what your question was and I might've went on a tangent.
No, no worries. It's a lot of information to be gained, you know, just by this thought you were sharing. I mean, I think there is a lot of power in, I don't know if this makes sense, but like power in the patriarchy or the kind of the leader of the group and where their state is and how that filters down. I know that I couldn't even really start to form the person who I was going to be until I fully got out of my house and went to college, like not too far from where I live, like maybe an hour and a half. And while that kind of started the process, it wasn't really until I was like mid 20s that I was like, oh, this is kind of the track I need to, you know, it's just, it's unfortunate that so many people have to go through dark times, especially at an early age. You know, I think a lot of people have to become adults as children, and then that manifests in a lot of different ways as we grow up. But hey, look at us all now. Yeah. You know, well, Daisy, I really appreciate you sharing all of that. Savannah, did you have any follow-up questions for Daisy before we wrap up?
I didn't think so. I was going to point out that she mentioned cats twice showing up. That's also like a very common thing they say. First of all, pets are a phenomenal predictor of like paranormal phenomena occurring. Pay attention to your pets. If they start acting weird, they're going to notice things first. Same with kids. But pets before kids, almost 100% of the time. They say that dogs are like our protectors, like from the physical things. Cats are absolutely spiritual protectors. Those things, I don't know what the heck they're doing. I don't know how they just cross, but they pay attention to cats. That's a big takeaway from your story, especially because they are in the dream as well. Presumably the same entity in both situations, that the cat was on it and on the defense. Pay attention to cats, guys. Pay attention to cats.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. Like, it makes you think about where the expression nine lives, like cats have nine lives, comes from. How, okay, well, if they're living one here, are they living eight other ones simultaneously in different realms? Or can they see in different realms, and so that's why they have nine lives? You could definitely like spin it and kind of theorize and see that in other ways, I think, which is intriguing.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you both for being here. This was a great episode. I thoroughly enjoyed. It's always a weird thing to say when you're hearing somebody talk about something terrible they experienced. But it was, I think the audience will enjoy this episode a lot too. Savannah, where can our audience find all your amazing content if they want more Savannah in their life?
Y'all just come over to TikTok. I'm at It's That Witch Up the Holler. Go to my link tree in my bio and find me everywhere else.
And Daisy, I know you have a lot of different content to offer as well, as we talked about, from makeup tutorials, talking about, you know, being sober and just you know, you have lived a very interesting life. If our fans want to find out more about everything that you have going on, how can they do that?
Yeah, so until my memoir is released, you can find me at DAZEEMAEE, which is Daisy May, on every single social media platform that exists. Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube are my main, so you'll find the most content from me there.
Both of you are obviously on a great trajectory, and it's a lot of fun to get to interview or co-host with people like you guys. So thank you so much for being here. I hope you have a great rest of the week. So with that, I'm Noah Daniels.
I'm Savannah.
I'm Daisy.
Woo! Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.